Welcome. I'm Christina Michelle, inviting you to join me for Culture Rich Conversations, an ongoing feature of Juno Afternoon. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. This afternoon, I will tackle the deeply personal topic of domestic violence because everyone knows someone who's been affected. According to a CDC survey, 20 Americans experience intimate partner physical violence every minute. That totals around 10 million victims per year. The journey from victim to survivor is a private and painful one, but with the right resources, healing is possible. My guests today are Dr. Deborah Warner and Marilyn Johnson. Both of them have their own unique stories to share, and it is an honor to speak with them today. If you or someone you know is struggling in an abusive relationship, it is our hope that the information given today will help guide you towards healing and freedom. From KTOO in Juneau, this is Culture Rich Conversations.
Culture Rich Conversations is made possible by a grant from the Social Justice Fund Grant Program of the Alaska Community Foundation.
Culture Rich Conversations on Juno Afternoon is sponsored in part by Mark Stofa and Sarah Hannon of the Alaska Wild Salmon Company, delivering fresh salmon to Juno homes since 2006. Learn more at goodsalmon.com or 907-321-4997.
The Black Awareness Association would like to take a moment to recognize that Culture Rich Conversations is broadcast from Thlinkit Ani. We acknowledge those families who made use of this land and waterways for thousands of years and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and future generations. Gunalshish, thank you.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich.
Welcome to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Joining me from Washington State is Dr. Deborah Warner. She is a trauma expert, forensic psychologist, public speaker, accomplished author, and currently a college professor in Los Angeles. Welcome, Dr. Warner.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Can you start with sharing how you got into the work that you do, particularly around advocacy for domestic violence against men?
Well, you know, I do a lot of work around violence in general against people and trauma. And so, you know, I always tell people this is just the field that God gave me. And working with men, especially men who have been abused, there's not a lot of people talking about men and men who have been abused because a lot of times people don't believe them. And I've learned from my TED Talk when I did it, it was, you know, one of the first out there on male sexual trauma and male abuse. And it's because I'm a woman, it's easier for society to hear it. And so a lot of times it's easier for society to make changes because it comes from a different voice. And so that's a lot about how we're socialized. And so I kind of got into it because I could make a difference in that neck of the woods. And plus my husband is a survivor of trauma. And so that was very helpful to be able to help him on his journey in telling his story.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's awesome to know. I wasn't aware of that. So can you share a little bit about how you would define domestic violence? And then we'll talk more about the work that you do.
Domestic violence is really about anything within the household that affects another person that could be abusive or violent, right? So a lot of people think of the man hitting the woman, right? But it really could be verbal abuse. It could be locking someone in a room. It could be turning their kids against them, right? People don't realize that people do that, right? And so then you say mom is stupid or dad is stupid. The kids begin to have that thought process about the parent. That's not good, because then the kids begin to act like their parent their parent does to the other spouse, right? And so domestic violence is anything in the home that is causing intimate partner issues that is really abusive.
Thank you so much. I think of a time where I saw a little boy. He might have been about 5 years old, and he wanted milk from his mom, and he slammed his hand on the table, like his fist on the table, and he called her by her name and said, "Milk now!" And I later found out that his father was actually quite abusive to his mother, and I actually learned from the child. I figured that out, and so that's...
Right.
Yeah.
Right. A child is a mirror to how we are.
Mm.
They come into this world blank, right?
Yeah.
So they're learning from the environment that's around them. And I always can tell what's going on at home, especially when I see a little kid. They have no filter. So when the little kid is acting like that, I remember I was in a hospital waiting room, right? Hospital waiting room. And the kid didn't want to sit there. And I remember he just got up and slapped his mom across the face and said, "It's your fault.
Oh, wow.
Go fix it."
Wow.
And I went... no, it's not. I'm in the world. I'm off the clock. But all of me, all parts of me, I had to sit on my hand because I wanted to intervene in that. And I knew that it wasn't appropriate for that moment, but I said, I know what's going on in that house.
Yeah. So do you have any statistics as to how many men are actually affected by intimate partner violence or domestic violence here in the United States? I imagine it's more than than we think.
It's more than we think. But if you just look at, I like to look at the abuse stats, right? So if you just look at the abuse stats, 1 in 6 men have been abused. Mm. And if you look at all abuse, that's for sexual abuse, and you look at all abuse, it's like 1 in 4.
Wow.
Right? So depending on emotional, physical, any type of abuse, right? That's like, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of us trying to do, do the show right now, right?
Right.
One of us. If you look at that.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
And so that's amazing, right? So then when you look at the, and when you narrow it down to types, that takes it down to a smaller set of people, right? And a lot of times people don't know how to categorize abuse. So what happens is that they say, well, that, that wasn't abusive. My spouse, they just pushed me.
Mm-hmm.
No. They put their hand on your body, right? So a lot of times the numbers are not accurate because men will underreport abuse and domestic violence or anything like that because they don't want to be stigmatized. They don't want people to say, hey, I was abused by my spouse. Now their spouse could be a man or a woman or someone who doesn't identify. Okay. The problem is it doesn't matter. They're a guy. And men, there's this myth that men cannot be abused or they should have stopped it or they're stronger or they should suck it up and be a man. So, when we look at those statistics, they're completely skewed a lot of times, especially when you get into specific types of abuse.
So can you say more about things that are not as obvious, as obviously known or seen as abuse so that a person could say, hey, maybe I'm being abusive. Maybe especially as a woman, we may do things that we aren't necessarily seeing as abusive. What are some of those things? Like you said, the example of pushing someone. What about like blocking somebody's, they can't exit a room, things like that. Like what are some things that we can be mindful of?
Can't exit a room, taking someone's car keys every time they enter the house. My husband tells this story about someone he used to be with, right? And he said that she said to him, be careful what you eat around here.
Ooh.
And she made all the meals.
Ooh.
Now, people would think, oh, my God, that's funny. She's mad at him. But think about this deeper.
Mm.
He's hungry. She buys all the food. She puts it in the fridge. She makes all the meals. And he has to sit in terror thinking that he might, right?
Wow.
And he realized, wow, this is not a good relationship because why would you put someone through that? And she makes his lunch every day. Like, you got to think about it in a deeper sense when people say that. That's a threat.
Yeah.
That's abusive because of the emotional turmoil that has caused you, okay? We've all seen the old cartoons and things like that with the woman with the rolling pin going after the guy, right? And the guy's running. Even at Disneyland, they changed it now because the woman was running after him instead of, you know what I mean? People would have the guys running after the girls, but she's, like, you know, trying to hit him or whatever it was in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. And they've changed that because it was very skewed, right, in certain directions into our gender norming and our stereotypes. And so there's all of these things out there, these images that we have in the world, in our cartoons, in our socialization with children and everything, that are just norms for us, and that sometimes we chuckle and think it's funny, but it's not funny because we are teaching that it's okay to harm a man. It's okay for a man to have domestic violence. It's okay for a man to go through these things, and that's why they don't tell. That's why it's underreported. That's why we have all of we're talking about it now, because it's something that people aren't even aware of.
Right. So what can we do to help change the stigma around men and domestic violence, like just as an average person? I would imagine, obviously, if somebody does tell us that they are being abused, that we let them know that we believe them and that we're supportive of them. But let's say that you suspect that somebody that you know, a male, is in an abusive relationship. Like, how do we even approach that subject without making them feel, I don't want to say emasculated, but how do we comfortably approach the subject?
Yeah. It's a very tricky subject. But I will tell you, if a man discloses to you and he tells you, it's likely it's true, unless there's some sort of mental illness that has been documented, that they have dissociative identity disorder, or they have a pattern of, you know, a severe mental illness. A lot of times men will not lie about that. Okay. Now, the first thing I tell people to do is stop talking. Even me, I love to talk, but I will go, I have a coat, you know, especially when I'm working with clients, it has nuts and water. And if a man is disclosing that to me for the first time, the first thing I do is shut my mouth and let him get it all out. Because if I stifle that, he likely will never tell anyone again. Most men who have been abused, especially with sexual abuse, it's 44% of them do not disclose till 20 years later.
Ooh.
Okay, 44%. And men can be raped. Okay, and people don't realize that. And so the second thing I do, that once they finish their story, I say, I am so sorry that happened to you. I make sure they know I believe them. And then the last thing I do, Chris Anderson, the ex-executive director of Male Survivor, he horned this into me. I say, thank you. Thank you for telling me your story. Because they didn't have to, and it validates that I heard them. There's something I always say, let's listen, let's love. You can hear words. But listening is putting it inside, right? And then you respond with love. I'm not saying I'm in love with you. I'm responding with my heart. So I always say thank you, because I'm showing you my heart was with you when you told me your story.
Wow. So I'm so sorry that happened. I believe you, and thank you.
And be quiet. Let them finish.
And be quiet. Okay.
Yeah.
So would
you ever heard that saying that's in the Bible, be still and wait?
Yes.
Be still and wait.
That's beautiful. Do you recommend encouraging them towards help? Because, you know, especially as women, and, you know, if a man is disclosing this very deep and painful information, you know, we might tend to want to help or try to fix it. So would you suggest that we encourage them towards help? Or is that enough just to hear them and to just show our heart and just let it be?
You have to encourage them for help, because here's the issue. You have your life that would have happened before the trauma. Then you have the trauma that's happening, and you have your life after. The life after is repairing what would have been, right? And you're living with that for the rest of your life. And a lot of times, because of the social stigma, men don't disclose, a lot of that stuff and problems that you got from the abuse that has happened to you comes out in a lot of negative ways. Intimacy problems, right? Acting out with drugs and alcohol, not being able to connect, right? There needs to be intervention somehow, right? So they can tell the story, that will free them. But the more they tell the story, the less that's a burden for them going forward in life.
That's a great point. When you said the intimacy problems, do you think that that's something that men are even aware of? That they, because a lot of men, especially African American men, I'm like learning from research and from the work that I do in domestic violence advocacy, that that's an issue that they experience. But it doesn't seem like they necessarily correlate it with the violence that has happened to them or the trauma that they've experienced. And so are they related? And if so, do you think that it's, you know, helpful to point that out? Hopefully I worded that well.
I think that a professional should point it out.
Okay.
A lay person should just support. And you can go to college campuses and get free counseling all the time, but you can also, you know, you can contact me at the Men's Treatment Institute and I will, you know, try to move you on your way. There's Male Survivor, there's Men Healing, they do a weekend of recovery. But one of the things that I always tell people is that get a professional in there that can help you with that, because everybody manifests their issues differently, right? But definitely, it has some connection, right? So some people become overly act out and some people become inward, right? And they don't want to be with anybody or they want to be with everybody, right?
Right.
I've seen that.
Right.
Or I've seen where they just have problems in a certain area and there's triggers and you don't know where the anger is coming from, because the one emotion men can have is anger, right? Because you can be assertive. You can be angry. You can play on the football field. You can be reckless. You can hurt yourself by playing on the football field. You can do all these things, and no one's going to look at you funny, but what you're doing is hurting. You're dealing with the pain inside, right? Well, that takes a professional to help you deal with that in an appropriate way and change that behavior. So absolutely, they should get support, but they should get help. And you, as a loving person, should say, hey, maybe you should try to see somebody. And then they may not. It may take a while. But just keep encouraging and supporting them.
Thank you so much, Dr. Deborah. As we close out, what resources are available for men who suffer from abuse that you are aware of? And also, can you share with us how we can contact you?
Yeah, so I'm on the board of the Weekends of Recovery, which is the Men Healing, and that is an amazing weekend for men who have been abused in many different ways. They specialize in sexual abuse, but they also can help you with other types of abuse. Can you still hear me?
Yes. Okay, it looks like we lost Dr. Deborah as soon as she asked if we could still hear her. It's the Weekend of Recovery is what she was just speaking about. We might be able to get her back, but if not, then we will make sure that we get that information on how you can contact her and get more information on the Weekend of Recovery. All right. It looks like we may have recovered Dr. Deborah.
I'm here. I don't know what just happened.
That's okay.
I was talking about Men Healing, but and they specialize in other types of abuse and give you a referral. But you can always contact me. I have a book about this, and you can find me at drdeborahwarner.net.
drdeborahwarner.net. And Dr. Deborah, can you spell your first name, please?
D-R-D-E-B-R-A.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Warner, for taking the time to speak with us today. And thank you for the work that you do. It is so, so very important. I am a advocate at our local domestic violence shelter, and it was only a few years ago that we started to serve men, and we are seeing that there is such a huge need for it. And so I am just so thankful to know that you're doing this work as well.
Thank you. Yeah, there are very few shelters for men, and for every like one there, you know, for every 10 there's like one for a man, and it's like half the size of what it is for a woman. So I'm glad that you're doing that.
Yeah, likewise. Well, there are resources available for anyone in need of help. If you or someone you know is a man in an abusive relationship, please call the Domestic Abuse for Men hotline at 1-888-743-7541. Also, the National Domestic Violence Help Hotline is 1-800-799-SAFE. This is Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle, and we'll be right back.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Joining me from California is our next guest, Marilyn Johnson. She is a certified life coach, personal development coach, motivational speaker, and entrepreneur. Welcome, Marilyn.
Hi. Thank you, Christina.
So glad to have you here today. And actually, the way that I learned about you was through your Instagram, and you had done a post. You were doing a speaking engagement, and you were talking about domestic violence and just sharing some encouragement for survivors and those who are wanting to heal from traumatic domestic violence experiences. And I was wondering if you'd be willing to just share a little bit about your journey of healing.
Yeah, it was quite a bad, because this happened when I was very young. I was 22 years old when I was in a relationship, and that person was a little bit older than me. And I didn't know he was in an abusive relationship until I get out of it. It wasn't easy to get out of it, but I was able to get out of it after I lost a baby. And I was a little bit like confusing about his behavior, because one day he can be Dr. Hill and then the next day he can be Mr. Hyde. That was very confusing. I want to stay. If I want to leave, I think I need to stay until I have the courage to live, when I realized myself, I deserve so much better. And when I get out of this relationship, it was really hard to let other people approach me, because I think everybody is the same. How can I be able to open my heart again to love, to start over? But I was giving myself the chance to try again and start over again. And my healing journey, it's more, I was the one who be my, I was myself against myself. I was between and in front of myself, because I didn't really have a chance to have somebody to talk, to explain what's really happened, because I think nobody wasn't able to understand me. But I was able like to talk to myself, do a lot of self-talk, do a lot of mirror work. That's how I become like healing myself. That's why now I am in the process like to help other women, because I say I didn't get a chance for somebody helping me. I know better now, and I am able like to help other people. So the picture you saw, you see on my Instagram, that was in 2020. I'm originally from Haiti, and in 2020 I went over there. I did a seminary about domestic violence and the different kind of abusive relationship, because sometimes people think it's only physical, and they don't aware of it can be emotional and psychological, because people very, it can be verbal, because they say, oh, my partner never hit me. It's not, I'm not in an abusive relationship. Sometimes it's just talking bad to me, but we are fine. You know, there are like different type of abusive relationship. And at that moment, I was able to do this seminary and make those women aware of those signs when you're in a relationship, when it's time to leave, what you have to do.
So can you share with us a little bit about how it started with your relationship? Because no abusive relationship or abuser just, you know, starts off talking poorly to you or, you know, hitting you or doing anything physical to you. Obviously, if they did, then, you know, a person would get away from them. They wouldn't spend time with them. It kind of builds up. So what did that look like for you?
Exactly. So it never really started in one day. It's mm-hmm. just like the little things. Like in my case, my partner was the best one. It was the best one. It was so romantic. I think there is no other man like him. I was feeling good. I was feeling safe. Until it start like, I don't want you to go to work anymore. So why you don't stay home? I will take care of you. Oh, why you spend so much time with your mom? Why you spend so much time talking on the phone? Because I wasn't living near to my family, so I have to talk to my family every day. So why are you talking to your family? So why you don't do this? Why you don't stay home? That call he started. And then when I start to talk, even in the neighborhood I was living on, I didn't have access to not have no friend. And he starts saying, I am your friend, so we can do everything together. So you don't need other people in your life. That's when you start, because they will start like with some controlling behavior. They will try to control you, make you feel safe. And they might yelling at you. But after that, they're going to come and they say, oh, I'm sorry. It's not my fault. Like, I'm sorry. That's how my case starts. It starts become saying me bad things, because the verbal abuse start before the physical one happen. Most of the time, it start like it telling you bad things. It makes you feel you are helpless, you're hopeless, telling you I am the only one you have. You will feel like you're so dependent on that person. So if you leave me, who you gonna have? I am the only one. In that case, you feel like, oh yeah, he's the only one. And that's when he start like to control you, and then you cannot really get access to other things.
Okay. Are you familiar with the term love bombing?
No.
Okay. It just sounded like what you were explaining in the beginning, where you said that you felt really safe and, you know, he was the best one. He was great. Everything, you know, was wonderful. And it sounds like what I understand to be love bombing, where it's almost like it's like the person gives you so much positivity that it's called bombing, because it kind of shakes you, it jars you, and you're like, oh my gosh, like nothing bad can happen with this person, because look at all the good that they're doing. And it's all smoke and mirrors. It's actually, you know, intended to throw you off your game and to make you more vulnerable and more susceptible to the abuse that's about to come. And so then followed by the isolation, like you said, the, you know, why are you, you don't have to go to work, I'll take care of you. And that can also feel like part of the bombing part, because like, well, this person loves me so much, they don't even want me to go to work. Like, they're willing to take care of me and pay, like, wow, who doesn't want that? And, but then that's where the controlling behavior comes in. And so you were in a relationship like this for about how long, would you say, before you realized that it was really a problem?
It took me about 2 years. In 2 years, it started changing, because that's when he started, having other women. And then when I find out and I'm trying to talk to him, and that's when he started telling me, you're crazy. Why you think I cannot have a friend? No. She's just a friend. And make me feel like I'm like saying things that I don't even see. Even I see those messages on his phone and everything. He say, oh, you're crazy. I'm not going to listen to you. And that's when I realized, I say, okay, thank you. And he start like changing. And whenever I bring the subject or talking about something, he don't really talk to me. And if I cook, because we were living together, and if I cook some food and he say, okay, I don't want this food, this is not what I want. Or sometime when he have to go to work, he just not even give me the money and just throw the money on the table. He say, okay, if you want to cook something, you cook something. Or the time is supposed to come back from work, that come back in that time, and come back late, and I cannot ask any question, where are you or anything. And if I'm crying, and he say, why are you crying? And that's when I say, okay, it wasn't like that, what's happened? And I decide to leave. We have our first fight. I decide to leave because he was just saying mean things. And I say, I don't like the way you talk to me. And I decide to leave. I went to at a friend's house, and he come back. He come to get me and telling me I'm sorry, buy me flowers and drink and singing in front of me. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to change. That's the word they will tell you. I'm going to change. I promise you I will make things better. Please come back. I'm sorry. And you believe them, because one thing about when you're in a relationship with an abuser, even a man or a woman, there is a part of you that love deeply that person. And there's another part of you we cannot really make a decision because you're confused, because they can be sweet, they can be very narcissist. In that moment, you don't know what to think. So when he told me to come back, I come back because I believe it's going to change. And things escalate, become worse. And when I found out I was pregnant, and I tell him, at the beginning, we want a baby. And then when I found out now I'm pregnant, I say, I'm pregnant. He said, you're pregnant. Why are you pregnant? Because we want a baby. He said, I never tell you I want a baby. And I start crying. He said, why you cry? He said, you have to, don't cry. And he trying to, he say, I never say you, I want a baby with you. And he's trying to walk away, and I'm trying to take, oh, stay. Because in that moment, you feel helpless. You feel hopeless. You feel like, this is the best I can have, so I don't want this goal. And I'm trying to make him stop, and then he pushed me, and he pushed me so hard, and I fell. And when I fell, 2 days after, and I started, like, bleeding, and I went to the hospital, and I lost the baby. And then when I lost the baby, that's the moment it kicked back. He said, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't know what's happened. I really want this baby. At that moment, I say, what's happened? Oh, I'm confused. Gosh. And the worst thing is that I was studying. I was at the university to get my bachelor degree in psychology. And at school, they was like doing thing and say, I know all the sign. Why I'm staying? Why everything they are saying at school, that's the same thing I'm having at home, what I'm saying in this relationship. And one day he went to work. And this day I was like crying after I lost the baby. And I stayed up in front of Miro. And since that day, Miro, that's when Miro became my best friend. And I stand up in front of Miro and I look at myself. And I was like crying. There's a part of me telling me, oh, I love him. I love him. And there's another part say, you deserve better. And I pack everything and I just leave with just one bag with my clothes. And I went to a friend's house and I turn off my phone, no receive, no call, because you have a weakness for them. Once you hear their voice, you're gonna feel, they're gonna get you. They will tell you, I'm sorry, and you're gonna go back. And I turn on my phone for a week. And I make my family calling him, telling him, where is Marilyn? Where is Marilyn? But everybody knows. So that's how I was able to leave him.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It took so much bravery, I can imagine, for you to actually be able to leave. And were you able to leave just that one time, or... were there?
I lived three times, but the fourth time, that's when I just, okay, it's not going to change.
Okay. So can you talk a little bit about that? How do you know if somebody is sincere? You know, if there's always an apology and kind of these grand gestures to get you back, how does somebody know if their partner is sincere and capable of change?
Nobody's going to change. People don't change. So that's one of the mistakes we make. We say, okay, if they do something, they're going to change. People don't change. But they can ameliorate their behavior. But in the case of somebody is an abuser, they're not going to change that who they are. You can know if they are sincere. But they never be sincere, but they always trying like to because they are so manipulative, you cannot know. But if they do, they tell you sorry the first time, is the first time they do something, they say sorry. Okay, you forgive them. And then they will do the same thing again and they say sorry. Now you know, okay, something is wrong. Because they're gonna keep saying sorry, 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 sorry. So they don't change, and they cannot ameliorate. If they decide to find help, Because for them, they are fine. They never have a problem. They always make you sure you are the crazy one. You are the one who have a problem. I'm fine.
That's a really good point. Do you think that it's, do you think that this is learned behavior for them, or that there are mental health factors involved, or a combination of things? What contributes to an abuser being an abuser, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I think it's something that came from childhood. It depends like all they growing up. And sometimes they are learning behavior from their parents or the way their parents teach them. So you may have a child, so you and your partner, you might be a good couple. But the way you're treating them, you make them feel less than other. And that's all like some kids become bullying. They're bullying other because they think like they are stronger when they make other feel less. Because sometimes at home, daddy yell at me, so I'm going to fight somebody to yell at. And then they growing up like that, and then it can escalate. And when they start having a relationship, they don't know how to treat somebody, because they never really have somebody treat them. And that's how sometimes it become more and more like a mental health situation. But I think it's something from at the beginning, at your childhood, how you're treating your kids.
Okay. Well, if you are just joining us, I'm here with Marilyn Johnson. She is a certified life coach, personal development coach, and motivational speaker. And she's here sharing her story about her experience with domestic violence and ultimately her path to healing. I'm Christina Michelle, and we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Joining me here is Marilyn Johnson, who is sharing about her experience with domestic violence and how she ultimately became an advocate for survivors of domestic violence. Marilyn, is it okay if I call you Mimi as we continue?
It's fine.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay. All right. So, Mimi, thank you so much for sharing what you already have about your experience. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people who can relate. I would like to continue the conversation just talking about who is most vulnerable to domestic violence. We heard from Dr. Warner that 1 in 4 women are those are the statistics, that 1 in 4 women have been victims of domestic violence on some level. What makes a person vulnerable to this type of experience?
You mean what make that abuser vulnerable?
As a woman who has been abused, are there things that you think contribute to being more likely to be abused as a victim, not even a woman, a male or a female?
I think what make the person vulnerable is something. Sometimes you don't really know what exactly happened at that moment. And one thing's about when you're a victim, you always think like it's my fault. Probably if I do something that can change it, probably it's me. You're trying to make you feel that it's you. But sometimes you don't have nothing to do with it, like to make that person being vulnerable. Like I say at the before we take the break, sometimes it's a learning behavior this person have, and then you grow up with that behavior and then become the person it is. Like the doctor say earlier, not only women that being abused, but we have also men. But when men get abused, we don't talk about that. We don't believe it, like she said. And we always take, like, when we talk about domestic violence, we talk only about women. We always think, when you say domestic violence, the first thing people think, oh, woman, but we forget about the men. So in that case, I can say, what makes the person vulnerable? We don't really know exactly what really happened.
Okay. And what about, like we said, or you said earlier that abusers often learn this behavior in childhood. It's something that's modeled for them. Do you think that that holds true for victims, that it's something that they could have experienced or witnessed in the home when they were growing up? Do you think that that makes someone more vulnerable to experiencing abuse for themselves later, or not so much?
I think so, because sometimes too, it's both sides from the victim and also for both sides from the abuser. The victim side, sometimes those people grow up with a low self-esteem. And then when they are in this situation, they decide like to accept the situation because they don't know better. By growing up, make them feel the way you talk to your child. I always take the example for the child because it happened to me. And I always think like, is the way you talk to the child in both ways. And if they make feel their self-esteem is low, they don't deserve anything better. They always have like to accept. They don't have the right to talk. They don't have the right to say no. And when they have to talk, you say no. I am the one to talk. You help at them, like make them like to silence. I'm the one to talk. So they cannot really use the voice. When they become be in a relationship, the person doing the same thing they used to have at home, and they have to accept it.
Okay. Can you share a little bit about the resources that helped you when you decided to leave the relationship that you were in?
I have to make a plan. You have to have a plan. It's hard to do, but you need a plan. If you want to leave, you need to have a plan. Because if you don't have a plan, you're going to come back. Mm. Because the first time I left, I didn't have a plan. So when it comes to get me, I say, okay, I have to come back. The second time, I don't have a plan. The third time, I don't have a plan. The fourth time, I say, I need a plan. So I make a plan. You have to have a plan. You save money. You talk to somebody. You have to let open to other people to help you. You need help. Don't think you have everything in the control because you can't, because your heart not going to let you do what you want to do. You need to think with your head, not your heart, because your heart wants him or her, but your head know what to do. Save some money. You need money. Save some money, make some money on the side. If sometimes we don't have access of the money, but if we have somebody we can talk to do something secretly for us, we put some money on the side. Because if we don't have money, we're going to come back. We're going to come back when we don't have money. He's going to offer us money. He's going to offer you money, going to tell you, I'm going to help you. You cannot pay your house. How are you going to take care of those bills? You're not working. Let me take care of this. Everything's going to be fine. No, save some money. Make your plan. Talk to somebody. Secure at least for another 3 months. And you say at that moment, you can get it back on your feet. So I think the resource that helped me, I was able to talk to one of my friends. And don't try to get in stuff with you. You can start over having everything you have right now. That I left with just my bag with some clothes. I didn't have anything. I put some money aside. I talked to a friend, and you have to, that's why the plan is important, because you have to figure out when you come back, when you go to work, what time you come back, Monday to Friday or Saturday, to know when's going to be the good time to escape. Don't tell nobody where you're going. Don't say nothing. Even the person that helping you, but don't go to that person's house the same night. Because sometimes when he come home, not seeing you, he's going to look for your family, friend, and everybody trying to get you back. Try make your plan secretly and then leave. That's what I did. It was hard at the beginning for me, but I used my mind. Like I say, I wish I had somebody to tell me what to do, but I have to do it on my own.
And is that part of the reason why you went into the work that you do now? Kind of being the resource that you didn't have?
Yes. That's why I become a personal development coach, especially for women. I help women build their self-confidence after they leave an abusive relationship.
Well, Mimi, can you give us some advice on what to do up until the time that you do leave? Because the reality is sometimes a person has to stay for a while, you know, whether it's because they're not ready emotionally, whether it's because they're not ready financially, whatever the case is, until they are at the point where they can leave, what are some ways that they can do their best to stay safe while they're in the relationship?
I remember when the doctor was talking earlier, she was saying something about when they are speaking, don't talk. I don't remember in what she say that. But once of the point you can do, well, there are like so many, you can do before you left. You have to realize it's not your fault. Yes. It's not you. You are not the problem. So whenever you're trying to make you feel you are the issue, you have to realize, no, I am not. When he's talking, if you can, don't, if it's somebody aggressive, don't stay near when they are talking. Don't respond when they are talking. Try to ignore them. Even whatever they say make you feel really, it's really hurtful, go somewhere. But when they are speaking like that, they will want you to just stay in front and listen to them. And if you are somebody who would like to educate yourself, I can say read some books, watching TV, or stay inside and try to find which way you can stay, you can plan your safety, having your safety plan to live. Meanwhile, you cannot try to not provoke. If you can exercise, and if they give you the ability to go to the gym, go for a walk, exercising while you're working on your plan.
Thank you so much for that. Can you speak to the person who knows or even suspects that they have a loved one who is in an abusive relationship? How can we support that person?
Say it again.
If you have a loved one that you suspect is in an abusive relationship, or maybe even know for sure, what are some things that we can do to support that person?
Be there for them, because they're not going to understand they're in an abusive relationship. Most of the time, they're going to push you away. When you checking on them, they're going to push you away to say everything is fine. Make sure if you can visit them, and don't let them to leave the relationship, because they will say you're destroying my family. You don't understand anything. Every time is fine. And give them time. If you can bring some resources or make them hear other people's story, because sometimes people will be ready to talk when they are ready to talk. But if you can make them hear a story about situation they are in, they can understand better. But if your family, you're trying to help, they're not going to understand. They're always going to think, oh, you are destroying my home. You not understand anything. Everything is fine. But you have to be patient with them, patient, and be there for them. Visit them, call them. Everything is fine without forcing them and let them. You have to leave. They're not going to understand. You're not leaving. But put them in a situation to find out themselves. This situation is not good for you. What you want to do without telling them to leave.
That's great advice. Thank you so much, Mimi. Can you let us know how we can reach you if someone wants to work with you?
Oh, I am on Instagram at Everything Mimi. Mimi, it's M-I-M-I-E. And also can go to my website. It's buildyourselftoday.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. We've heard from Marilyn Johnson, also known as Mimi, certified life coach, personal development coach, and she does work with survivors of domestic violence, and just shared how we can reach out to her if you are looking to connect with her. Mimi, your story is it's remarkable and very inspiring, and thank you for the work that you're doing in the world and for being here today.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you for having me.
And for our listeners, we do have some additional resources that I would like to share with you. If you or someone you know is in an abusive relationship, please contact the National Domestic Abuse Help Hotline. Their number is 1-800-799-SAFE. That's S-A-F-E. Local resources here in Alaska include AWARE in Juneau. AWARE is traditionally known for serving women and children, but as of a few years ago, AWARE does also serve male survivors as well. The phone number to reach AWARE is 1-800-478-1090. There is 24-hour support there from an advocate. There is AWAKE, A-W-A-I-C, in Anchorage. Their phone number is 907-272-0100. We have Spectrum also here in Juneau, which is a branch of AWARE. And Spectrum serves our LGBTQ plus community. Their phone number is 907-586-4902. There's also WISH in Ketchikan, which is a domestic violence safe house, and their phone number is 1-800-478-9474. There is Becky's Place, Haven of Hope in Haines. The phone number is 907-766-2105. For a complete list of Alaska's domestic violence resources, please go to www.andvsa.org and click the Find Help tab. I'm Christina Michelle, and you've been listening to Culture Rich Conversations. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, where Kashuk are ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin talk anachaya ha anikach, gunish cheese.
Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Today in Black History, we recognize General Benjamin Oliver Davis Sr. On October 27, 1940, General Davis Sr. became the first African-American general in the United States Army. He was born in 1877 and joined the military in 1899. Today, we remember General Davis Sr., who dedicated 50 years of service to the United States military. Once again, I would like to thank our guests, Dr. Deborah Warner and Maryland Mimi Johnson, for joining us this afternoon and sharing their personal stories and incredible insight with us. It was such a privilege to speak with them today. We appreciate our listeners for being here with us, and we look forward to hearing any feedback you may have for us. If you want to reach us, our email address is junobaa@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook just by searching JunoBAA. Today's producer was Natasha Boozer. We'll meet again next week, and in the meantime, may your life be blessed and flow with ease. I'm Christina Michelle, and this has been Culture Rich Conversations.
Culture Rich Conversations is made possible by a grant from the Social Justice Fund Grant Program of the Alaska Community Foundation.
Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klingit and Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich.